Welcome back, fight fans, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Last week, we reached a milestone of producing episode 20 of the podcast. That's 20 full weeks of the show, and that doesn't even include our bonus interviews with stars like Nate Wood, Chris Duncan, and Rofian Stotts. I'm your host, Jake Jones. My co-host this week is my partner in crime, the usual suspect, Sean Gilley. How are things, man?
I'm good, man. UFC, the weekend was incredible, especially in the main event.
It was really nice to have a card like that back, wasn't it? I think there's been a few times recently where we've had like numbered or pay-per-viewed cards where they've been so good, and then you've kind of had midweek cards where you're like, I say midweek cards, sorry, like fight nights, and you've kind of gone, okay, it's very, very average. But I'm just glad that we had a great card back. How are things with you? News from me today. I got my computer. We are now computer buddies.
My computer buddies.
We both managed to get ourselves set up with a proper gaming PC. Give Sean a follow on Twitch. Any of you guys listening, he is smashing out his streams at the moment. And what's this about you being signed to Orbit?
Orbit, yeah. It's a stream. I know, see?
Look
at
him.
Is that already kicking off, man?
But also, make sure to give Sean a follow so that you can see me whoop him at FIFA.
That's not getting streamed ever.
Well, right, let's get into last week's MMA action. For me, this card delivered with some lovely little narratives and results in the world of MMA. To start, a short but sweet fight of the evening. Jordan Levitt versus Matt Wyman. Last week, we saw a former NBA player get knocked out. This week, we got to see a UFC fighter get slam dunked. Jesus. I mean, literally, what a bizarre and almost uncomfortable 22 seconds of a fight. We got to see a very, very rare kind of knockout, a power slam from the undefeated, now at, you know, lightweight, Jordan Levitt. I mean, literally, one punch was thrown in the fight, and then they engage in this sort of strange grappling fest where, like, Levitt literally, he picked him up and kind of walked him across the cage, but then only slammed him down into oblivion. He literally slammed him so hard on the canvas that Wyman was KO'd. I've only seen this happen a few times, but when it does, it tends to deliver. I think the last time was Gerald Harris back in 2017. He actually shared the post from someone I follow online. She posted the video and he shared it saying, yeah, this looks pretty familiar. Do you know what's something amazing about him saying that? Gerald Harris has knocked out not one, not two, not even three, but four people via body slam.
Like, really?
That is absolutely incredible. I mean, imagine that, like being like, yeah, I've got this many knockouts on my record. Oh, have you done it? Power slam.
Yeah, was he a wrestler?
I mean, I think, yes, his background must be, but God. I mean, even now talking about Jordan Levitt, adding that to your resume, that is the way you get a finish. I think that's his UFC debut as well. That is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What did you think it's so hard to say of the fight because it's 22 seconds. But what a way to kind of make a statement, I guess.
Yeah, like he listened to his corner. You've got like some fighters don't listen to the corner. He's like, oh, I'm coming over here. Then he framed on his head because I don't think he would have knocked him out if he didn't frame on his head.
Mm.
So he framed on his head, then he went for a just massive slam. I swear down, his eyes went cross-eyed.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the knockouts where they literally do go stiff. And it's almost uncomfortable to watch because they almost look like they're about to start crying. They're kind of like led there, like shocked for a second. You're like, yeah, he's out. And I said, what can you say about 20 seconds? But I think Levitt made great on his UFC debut, and it's like Chaos Williams did. He made a statement. And he's now left us all wondering who he's going to face next. I don't know who it's going to be next. I don't know what you give him after that. But regardless of who it is, I think I will be tuning in. And I think everyone else will be too. Well, let's move on to a co-main event of the evening. And the prediction last week was pretty spot on, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I said that I think Jamahal Hill has the ability to put OSP out there or ride high throughout the fight. And he did just that. Not to blow my own trumpet. However, a big factor I noticed in this fight was Jamahal's work controlling OSP's head and using the clinch to land good shots. And that's exactly what I said last week I felt was OSP's weakness. Mm-hmm. He's a strange one because he tries to roll with the punches, but ultimately fails to do so the majority of the time. It's quite weird to see as like OSP doesn't necessarily keep a high guard up. He just tries to evade the punch. And I don't think it really pulls off for him. I was seriously impressed that Jamahal Hill was able to get the finish over a guy who formerly competed for the interim title just a few years back. Like, that is a great statement. And to extend yourself to something like, what is it, 8 or 9-0? That's a genuinely fantastic achievement. Now, what I like is we get to see a young rising light heavyweight prospect, but also, I think it's a weird story with Jamal, because he is, you can tell he's already got that entertainment factor to him. To be on the co-main event against OSP at, what, 8 or 9 fights into your career, maybe 10, that shows that you have some promise about you. Interestingly, though, it actually looks like he may have fractured his left hand during the fight. So that's now got to be x-rayed. And if it comes back broken, he can face a 6-month suspension for this. I mean, he's just come off a 6-month suspension, and on under worse circumstances, because his last 6-month suspension was because he tested positive for marijuana. I mean, we spoke about this last week. What a stupid way to lose a fight, get a no contest and get banned. But now he does also face that again. So it'd be really, in my opinion, it'd be really unfortunate if he does get this 6-month suspension, if his hand is actually broken. Because, I mean, as I said, I think you put on a fantastic performance there. And I really do think that the future is very bright for him. Talking about OSP, though, he is treading in dangerous waters now.
Yeah.
So, what is it? Something like 80 stars are to be released from the UFC, or I can't remember the figure.
60, I think, yeah.
60.
Yeah.
He could be nearing that, in my opinion. He's a strange guy. As his last 5 fights, they're literally 1 win, 1 loss, 1 win, 1 loss. That is a little bit worrying. He's 37 now, and in my opinion, it's time to make it or break it for OSP. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think Hill looked amazing against, like, say, a veteran now who's been in the sport for years. Like, he controlled every round.
Absolutely.
Like, I think OSP's biggest problem was that they were both southpaw.
Mm. She really struggled against that, didn't he?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, what do you think about the stoppage? So I know some people... What sort of annoyed me about this, I think it was Herzog refereeing it, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Some people saying that it's a sad state of affairs that it was stopped on the feet. And I think, no, in my opinion, that fight was done. OSP was, as I said, he doesn't keep necessarily high guard up, so he tries to evade the punches, and he was taking too much damage. I reckon there must have been, what, 30, 40 strikes thrown there?
Yeah, it was a perfect stoppage.
I think it was a perfect stoppage too, and it's a bit of a shame to see people kind of going out there and saying, oh, it's poor, and that like that's not a good finish for Hill. Well, in my opinion, if you're going to get a stoppage over OSP, regardless of how it's done, that is a good result.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the future with him. And I do also hope that OSP comes back, because I like having OSP in the UFC. I just think that, once more, make that statement, it's now time to make it or break it. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our main event of the evening. I mean, once more, I'm not trying to say anything, mate, but was I right or was I right? And you've got to give me this, because I've been so poor all year, so I will be rubbing this one in. The Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori, got a fantastic, well-deserved, unanimous decision victory over Jack Hermanson in the main event, and now sees himself 5th in the UFC rankings. That is 8 spaces higher than he previously was. And what a story to tell, and what a way to announce yourself as a top 5 fighter. What I love here is the story that we actually spoke about the other day. In early 2020, he had 3 fights cancelled, 1 at London, and then 2 in June and July. The situation with Carl Robertson he had as well, where Carl Robertson missed weight for the actual fight that they had, and he missed it by a few pounds, which obviously got under Vettori's skin. And then the first fight they were meant to have was cancelled due to illness, which technically was just that Robertson couldn't make weight. So not only did he have a fight cancelled in March, but then he has 1 other fight cancelled because your opponent doesn't take it seriously. You may be given the benefit of the doubt, thinking, oh shit, maybe this guy's had a bad wake-up, we'll make sure he's okay. But then literally a month later to do pretty much the exact same thing, but then say, okay, we will have the fight now. You think, yeah, you're taking the piss. I think at the same time as well, his granddad fell ill. Then he goes out and gets a win. He gets a matchup. He got a matchup twice for this card before he was actually matched up with Hermanson. He was a matchup against Akhmedov and Jacare Souza. For them fights to be rescheduled and then to step into the main event on that notice, takes that chance and ends 2020 as a top 5 UFC fighter. That basically means he's top 5 middleweight in the entire world. To me, that is fantastic. It's brilliant that, as I said, earlier in the year, he has 3 fights cancelled. And then just some of the circumstances that he's been through throughout the year, pretty much this whole year, he's had 5 fights changed, and then he's had issues with his family and everything like that. To then come back and beat someone like Hermanson, I think hats off to you, Vettori. That is fantastic.
Exactly. It showed on his face when he won the fight, man. Like, that is one... people might not agree with us, but I actually thought that was one of the best fights of the year. It was non-stop, yeah. Back and forth. Like Dominic Cruz was saying, it was just like a phone booth fight.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. I think, once more, people like to say fight of the year as being something that's always like a knockout or anything like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be that. It just has to be pure MMA talent. And in a second, we're going to go through some of the stats, because I spoke about this last week again. Vittori's output is phenomenal. I thought he was great in the fight. Literally, he was just Jack Hermanson's skill set exemplified. He even knocked Jack down in the opening 2.5 minutes with a straight right followed by the left. Now, that was first dangerous waters for Jack, because you thought, is he going to get an early finish? But then, in my opinion, he just proceeded to basically dominate all the fight. And that shows with the scorecard, 49-46, 49-46, and I think it was 49-45.
He's caught. Wow. Yeah. That was Mike Tyson's coach, wasn't it, last week?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that's what then Dominic Cruz was saying.
I didn't know that. That's a nice, interesting little fact there. But what that scorecard basically shows is that, yes, Jack won a round, but besides that, Vittori just dominated. And as I said he would do this. I mentioned the intensity that Vittori brings, and that I said last week that he lands nearly 30 strikes a round. Well, he outdid me this weekend. Vittori landed a total of 202 strikes on Saturday night. That matches the likes of Max Holloway, Colby Covington, do you know what I mean? Like the guys who are known for their volume.
Yeah.
I think he was seriously impressive, and I love where he puts himself at £185 now. Now, this is the bit you always love. What is next? I would say...
I'm looking at the rankings right now, and I'm like, whoa.
Well, I have a few thoughts. I'd say Costa or Till are the only two guys he should fight.
Exactly.
And in my opinion, that's for supporting Vittori as well. I think if you chuck him at Adesanya now, you do Costa and Whittaker dirty, and they've done that enough. I also think he claims he would smash Adesanya, that he's his worst nightmare. I disagree. Four fights ago, you lost that guy via decision. Yes, you've adapted since then, and I totally agree that you give anyone a tough fight in Vittori, but the title shot isn't next, and I think that to really make a statement, he should have gone out there and he should say he's going to KO someone like Till or Costa.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I think that was a better statement is because, in my opinion, that's more realistic. If he got a title shot, I think it would shock the world. If he then went out there and knocked out Till or Costa, which is much more possible, I think then he would shock the world in a good way. Do you know what I mean? Shock the world in a bad way if he got the title shot, shock the world in a good way if he knocked someone like Till or Costa out. And to me, them fights make more sense and sets up a fight with someone like Izzy. I really like Vittori, but I think if he fights Adesanya next, the UFC actually do him an injustice, because to me, right now, that fight does not sell.
Mm-hmm.
If he goes and knocks out someone like Till or Costa, give me that fight. That's when he deserves his title shot. As for our guy, Jack, I don't think it's an embarrassing loss at all. I like the guy a lot. He moves down two places in the rankings, and in my opinion, he just needs one more win to get back to where he was. I think he has the choice of two guys. Till, like the Till matchup made in Europe, or Derek Brunson. Till makes sense. I mean, they would sell out a European card easily, and they've obviously already been due to be matched up against each other, both coming off a loss as well. But Brunson is also on a very, very good win streak. He's beaten three guys in Elias Teodoro, Ian Heinisch, and Edmund Shahbazyan. Now, they are three top young talents that were coming up in the sport that Brunson was able to beat and show that he has still got that veteran experience that he needs to be where he is. Jack would be that step up for Brunson, and the step up that Brunson wants and deserves, because for me, Brunson's kind of claiming that he deserves kind of like a title shot in the near future. In my opinion, you don't. But he definitely kind of does deserve a decent step up, and I think that's what Hermanson offers. And I also say this because I've mentioned a bit about what's happening with Till now. Yes, Till might get Hermanson in a rematch, or another matchup out there that I think would make a brilliant fight is Till versus Cannonier. I think that makes for a fantastic fight and a number one contender after Robert Whittaker. The gorilla versus the gorilla. It's already made. I mean, you can imagine all the paperwork, the posters and stuff like that for it. In my opinion, that fight sells as well. And I think just what Vittori has done now has really spiced up the division. Again, I think it's always been a very, very good division to kind of look around and be like, shit, what's happening here? But especially with the loss of Romero in there, I think Vittori just fits himself seamlessly into that and really gives us what we wanted at £185. Well, that is our recap of last weekend's MMA action complete. Let's move on to our preview of this weekend's card, and boy, do we have an exciting pay-per-view card to talk about. What I love about UFC 256, it features Cyril Gane versus JDS, and Mackenzie Dern versus Vera Jandiroba. Got it. And also Kevin Holland versus Jacare Souza. But we aren't even going to break these guys down on today's episode. That, to me, shows how good this card is. Them names could sell out a fight night, as in they could either main event a fight night or co-main event a fight night, and we're not even going to talk about them on this. Let's get straight into it then. Our third fight from the night, Mr. Matrix is back. It's Rafael Fiziev versus Renato Moicano. Talk to me, what do you think?
Mate, I love Rafael. I think he's like one of these fighters that's so humble, and he's just... He comes from Min Kam, Tiger Muay Thai, one of the best striking camps basically in the world. Mm-hmm. But he's coming up against an opponent, right, who's won by submission in 44 seconds in round one.
Yeah,
he's exactly. He's got to be worried about that. Well, he's not worried, but if his submission game's strong, then he's got to watch out. You know what I mean?
Oh, see, I totally agree with you. Exactly what you've said there is the interesting... What the most interesting thing here to me is that Moicano has been beaten now against Aldo and Chan Sung-yun by being TKO'd or KO'd, and that's what Fiziev is good at. However, Moicano, what he's good at is submission, and he did just get a 44 second against Demir Hadzevich.
Yeah,
I mean, wow, what a statement to battle there. So for me, it's a really interesting matchup between two guys who might expose each other's weaknesses. I mean, first thing to talk about, Fiziev's dodge against Mark Jacquesi is becoming the thing of legend, and it's being replayed on and off throughout this week, and so it bloody should be. It was pure A-grade, top-level Muay Thai, and you can now see why he's one of the striking coaches at Tiger Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. He's not just a fighter for them, he actually coaches their fighters, and they coach. It's always been said, even Joe Rogan says this constantly, the Thais mastered striking. Now, Tiger Muay Thai is known as one of the best striking, the best gyms in the world and in Thailand.
Yeah.
Now, if he is one of the coaches there, that just shows how elite he actually is. And I've said it before, but to outstrike Mark Jacquesi in the fashion he did was incredible. He's one of those... Mark's one of them guys that most people don't want to stand toe-to-toe with, and they have a hard time striking against. Not only did Fiziev stand toe-to-toe with him, but he did it in a more impressive fashion than other people have, in my opinion. In the past, Mark has struggled with people coming forward to him and him being on the back foot. Now, Fiziev didn't really do that. He just stood there with him and traded. Now, most of Fiziev's shots were landing and little of Mark's were. Fiziev also utilised the classic Muay Thai kicks with some brilliant work to his legs and fantastic kicks to the body. And that's what I find interesting about that bout, is it wasn't like he was able to kind of put this pressure on Mark. And Mark, I said in the past, I have thought that Mark doesn't do well with forward pressure. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case in this fight. Fiziev just knew that if you stand toe-to-toe, I'm going to teach you what we're doing here. He literally made it like a lesson. Then, obviously, you have the Matrix dodge. I mean, that just symbolises how good this is. To have that flexibility in your back and the response time to dodge it in the way that he did, that shows how elite he is. And one more thing I want to talk about, once more about the striking department. There was a stage where Mark landed a clean punch to Fiziev's jaw. Fiziev just ate it and fired one back. He has a chin, he has a punch, and in terms of all-round striking, he is up there with the very best. But let's not suck up to him too much. I mean, I love him, but let's talk about Renato Moicano coming up against a very solid opponent here. Moicano is starting to grind my gears a little bit, because I remember watching this guy back in 2016 and thinking, okay, this guy's going to be special. And since then, we haven't had enough from him. Think about that. That was 2016 that he was becoming this prospect. He's still not there. He's got a record of 14-3-1, and he's been in the UFC since 2014. But this will be his 10th fight in 6 years with the promotion, and that's not averaging 2 fights a year, which to me, you should be making at least 2 fights a year.
Do you reckon if he loses this fight, you make a cut? They could be one of your 60 people that get cut.
I think he is in danger of doing that, because he got a good win over Hadzevich, and it would be unfair that he'll have lost to Aldo and Chan Sung-yun. Now, I completely appreciate they are people that you could potentially lose to, anyone could, but I don't think Hadzevich is anywhere near that level of saying that you would compete with, say, Chan Sung-yun and Aldo. To then win over Hadzevich, you go,
Yeah, fair. But it's exactly like what Anthony Smith did. Anthony Smith beat Devin Clark. That's not beating Jiří Procházka or Volkan Ozdemir. Do you know what I mean? That's not beating someone who's in the top 10 rankings. It's just beating someone who's offered to you. And I think that's exactly what happened with Moicano. So I just said a second ago about obviously being in 10 years, it's his 10th fight. In 6 years, sorry, it's his 10th fight. I get there might be injury troubles there, but this combined with how his record's actually gone, I think he needs to improve his game. He started off his UFC career with 3 wins, with a win over Jeremy Stephens in there as well. Okay. That is very impressive. Yeah. And then he loses to Brian Ortega, which to me is completely fair. Like, Ortega obviously has gone on to become one of the world's best. I get that. Then he beats Calvin Kattar. Once more, fantastic win. Because you think about it, you go, well, Calvin Kattar is the guy fighting Max Holloway next. Mm-hmm. Top. But that's only because Calvin Kattar, since that, has, I think, gone on a four wins, one loss against some of obviously the world's best. But then he beats Cub Swanson, and in my opinion, when he beat Swanson, I think it was 2018, I think Swanson might have been a bit past it then. Cub was a fantastic name a few years ago, or a few years prior to that bout, but I think to beat someone like Swanson, as I said, I don't necessarily think that states you as one of the best featherweights in the world. But then he loses to both Aldo and the Korean Zombie by KO/TKO. For me, what I've just gone broken down there, it's a bit too stop-start. There needs to be a time when he rides a 4-5 fight win streak.
Yeah.
And if, when he faces the top talent, he gets a setback, then he isn't ready, in my opinion. That's my issue, is that, yes, people can ride a 4-5 fight win streak, but then the moment they face a top talent, they lose that. That's not how it should be. Take Adesanya, for example. What, 20-0 now, 19-0, or wherever he's at? That's because he's constantly bettered in the opponents he's fought. That, to me, shows why he is at the top. But if you can ride a 4-fight win streak against very mid-level guys, but then can only get one win over a top level guy and then get a loss and then do the exact same again, that doesn't show you as one of the all-time greats. That just shows you as a journeyman, essentially. I think he got a good win over Damir Hadzevich, and I think he fully deserves a good fight, because we've said it, 44-second submission, you cannot deny that that proves his ability.
Yeah.
But now he needs to prove that he is ready against another top striker. Aldo and the Korean Zombie are known for their elite striking, and so is Fazeev, so it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be a tale of if the victor of this fight can overcome what they haven't shown much of in the past. Can Moicano best a Muay Thai coach and a spectacular striker, or can Fazeev be a phenomenal Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu artist and face someone entirely different to someone like Mark? Mark's pretty much the guy that he's not made, do you know what I mean, when I say made his name, not that that discredits what he's done in the past, but Mark Cherkasy, the fight against him was kind of what put him on the radar, everyone's radar, and got him to this fight. So Mark is nothing like Moicano. So that's going to be really interesting if Fazeev can produce that same style of fight against someone who fights very differently. I think the question begs, has Fazeev's matchups in the past been kind to his style? And has Moicano met a few unfortunate matchups? Or will we see Moicano push back again against a far superior striker? It's going to be a really interesting tale. And for me, Fazeev wins this by either TKO or KO early in the fight. Potentially rides out a unanimous decision victory. I would say he's got the ability to knock Moicano out. What are you calling?
I'm calling Fazeev, yeah. I think he's going to lay it on him. He's going to pressure him down. I think Moicano, is it Moicano?
Moicano.
is going to try and take us to the ground straight away. I think he is.
And I think that'd be a smart call from him. I think if you're going to try and get a win over someone like Fazeev, don't try and strike with him. Test his grappling. And it's not going to be easy to get him down, but if you can get him down, I know that Moicano's got that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu expertise to put Fazeev out of there. Mm-hmm. But we'll really have to see. Let's get into our co-main of the evening. El Kakoui is back against Charles Oliveira. What a fight we have here. Surely the winner of this looks to a number one contender spot next. Surely their next fight, it doesn't mean they're going to get the title next, but surely their next fight is against the guy who will get them to the title. I love this fight. I think it's brilliant. They are literally, in my opinion, identical. They are so similar in their styles and in the way they even act. And that's why I love these guys. Tony had a massive setback against Justin because it was so hard to take a loss after, 13 wins on the trot? And let's be honest, Justin just dominated him. Justin was just better. Justin utilized leg kicks and his striking just pieced Tony up throughout the fight. Now, I love this fight because Oliveira is also looking very, very good. we can judge Tony on the Gaethje fight, but also you have to take into account that he was on, what, a 13-fight win streak there. You have to judge him on all of them fights and how he's actually gone through them fights. And bear in mind, he beat, like, Anthony Pettis in that spree. He is phenomenal. Oliveira, as I said, looks good. He holds the record for the most UFC submissions, I believe. And he's riding a 7-fight win streak now. That's why I think these guys are so similar as well. Is not only are they very, very unorthodox in their striking, not only do their submissions come out of nowhere, and they are one, two of the best submission artists in the entire UFC, not just this division, but they both have rode now long win streaks against really good guys and are now very much deserving of that title shot. Oliveira against Lee in Brazil looked absolutely awesome. His striking was great, and then he submitted Lee. Honestly, I show people that fight for a fight that you might not have seen, if you know what I mean. Like, it's one of them fights that people might miss, but if you actually watch it, you go, shit, Oliveira's entertaining. Not only, honestly, I was so surprised at how good his striking was, because this was coming off Kevin Lee knocking out Gregor Gillespie. So when I saw that, I thought, oh, Kevin Lee's striking, that's what we're going to look out for. And it did the opposite for me. I then went, shit, Oliveira striking, wow, he was really good at distance, and really, his striking was just very fluid. He threw quite a few uppercuts in the fight as well, which just looked clean. He didn't look stiff throwing them. He just looked a bit, do you remember McGregor knocking out Eddie Alvarez? Their strikes just had that fluid kind of movement where they weren't just coming up straight down the middle or anything like that. They had that angle to them that you thought, wow, that is, when you watch that in slow motion, you go, well, that is pinpoint accuracy. Oliveira had a very similar style against Lee in that his accuracy just looked fantastic. But then, I mean, take it away. Tony Ferguson, man.
Tony, man. People think, I personally think this is going to be a striking fight.
That'd be very interesting.
I know, because I think both of them are really rounded on the floor. And I think there's going to be a non-stop striking fight.
See, I don't know why. I could almost agree with you there. Take Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis for an example. People would think that fight could go to the ground, and it did at one stage. And when it went to the ground, it was a thing of beauty. The way they were rolling out of their submission and stuff like that, it was gorgeous. Yeah. However, most of that fight was on the feet. And I think you could be right here that this happens again. I think these guys are obviously so good on the ground that they might want to test each other and try and see who's better on the feet. And that's not putting it as in like, oh, we'll just see who comes out the winner of this. I think they're both going to fancy each other in terms of who's going to actually win.
That'd be amazing. That'd be a war.
Oh, man, I'd love it. I mean, for me, I think Tony Ferguson takes his fight. He wasn't at his best against Justin, and I think he can cause Oliveira enough problems to put him out. Oliveira, I don't think he's been KO'd clean before. I could be wrong with that. And I don't think that's what Tony's going to do. I think Tony has been known to break people down throughout a fight, and I think he can do that against Oliveira. Oliveira looks great, but Tony is great as unorthodox jiu-jitsu, and I think that's where Charles turns when his striking fails. So can I see him doing that against Tony? I don't think I do. If Oliveira can't, I don't think across three rounds Oliveira can do enough to Tony in terms of the striking department to damage him, but I think Tony can. So if then Tony, say, wins a round or two via striking, I think Oliveira turns to submissions.
Yeah.
And for me, I just don't think he, well, despite the fact that he does hold that record and that there's no doubt he's one of the best submission artists ever in the UFC, I think Tony's that good at defending submissions that he'll get out of it. I mean, we've seen Tony do that before, where he just gets out of a sticky situation in such unorthodox fashion. For me, I think Tony wins by unanimous decision, or he could potentially sneak a little sub in there. The only other thing I can see is potentially Oliveira locking in, say, a guillotine at one point where you think, shit, wait, is that in? Oh my God, Tony's just tapped. But I would say 90% of my bet would go to Tony winning. What about yourself?
Same. I'm going to say a Darce choke by Tony Ferguson, round two.
Ooh, I love that. Ooh. And I love how direct you were with that. That's bloody hell, I did not expect that. Okay, well, I'm going to have to make a call now, aren't I?
Oh, I mean, that in my notes.
So, my primary thing, I'm going to say Tony by unanimous decision. If not, I will say Tony by TKO in the second.
We've got Tony.
Yeah. Right, let's sink our teeth into the main event of the evening. He's on track to record the fastest title defense in UFC history. Deiveson Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. I'm going to go straight in here. I'm going to call it 21-1 and still with an early round finish, in my opinion. This might discredit Moreno way too much here. He might prove me wrong. And if he does, then I'm back to my old ways, aren't I?
I'm going to agree with you, so.
Well, for me, Moreno didn't look his best against Royval. I think, I honestly think this, and I'll stand by this, if that fight wasn't stopped due to Royval's injury, I think Moreno would have had a much tougher fight on his hands and wouldn't have been able to turn it around this fast. I'm not saying Moreno wouldn't have beat Royval, but I think he would have had a much different fight, and I don't think this fight would have been made this quickly. Figgy looked absolutely great against Perez, and I think Moreno offers a similar fight. All around, he's good, but for me, Figgy's striking is so, so, so powerful and good for 125 pounds. And then he showed this last time out and against Benavidez. His submission skills are up there too. His reversal against Perez was sneaky and sublime. Yeah. It was he had a obviously Perez had a high leg, and you thought, oh, we might see Figgy go down here, we might see him tested. And Figgy literally rolled him into an ankle lock, wasn't it? And then managed to go get the guillotine, rear naked choking or something. Either way, was it?
Yeah, it was guillotine.
But that's what I mean is, you kind of saw like, shit, that's unorthodox. But also, it's on that level that I'm not saying it's as good as what Demetrius Johnson did, but it's on that level where you can say, well, if you can turn a sticky situation into something like a submission that quickly, you are very elite. Also, he became the first man to ever submit the legend Josef Benavidez. To me, that is also on another level. The way he dominated Benavidez twice, Benavidez was known as like, it's pretty much what Demetrius Johnson, Benavidez and Cejudo were known as like the top three flyweights in the UFC for a long time. Figueiredo decimated Benavidez twice. He just, to me, there's something about him. He's so, so good. And as I said, I'm not talking a lot about Moreno here because I just think I'm so sure in my head that this is going to be not a good night for him. I do think Moreno could try and take what Josef Amiga did against Figueiredo and try and beat him by decision and just try and basically utilize an all-around game and some grappling to get Figueiredo by decision. But I just don't see Moreno dominating him. That's my issue. I don't see him knocking him out or like taking him down for five whole rounds. I just can't see that happening. So for me, this fight is stopped in the first round. I think both fighters will start slow, but then a few minutes into the fight, Figgy's going to get his groove on. He's going to get his rhythm going, and I think he finishes Moreno. What about yourself?
I agree with you. 21-1.
Yep.
I agree. He's not ready for Figueiredo.
No, I totally agree. Right. That is everything complete. We're on good time today. I think we're just half an hour into the show. But we are not finished just yet. We have some announcements to make. One thing just from myself and the team at Ultimate MMA. We're at the moment, the Ultimate MMA podcast, already seeing a few polls on Twitter. What we're looking to do is decide who the pound for pound GOAT is. And we want you fans to decide. So get sharing that. We're going to run polls at the moment. At the moment, we currently have Amanda Nunes versus Petr Yan. Who would you select there, Sean?
Amanda Nunes.
Of course, it's got to be. One person selected Yan out of about 7 or 8 votes so far, and in my opinion, there's no doubt that Nunes is the GOAT there. I think that there will come a time where she might lose in this little tournament we're putting on. However, against Yan, despite the fact I think Yan's going to be a champion for a fair while, I don't think you can say that Yan's better than Nunes. Well, we've got another amazing thing to talk about. Yoel Romero, what the hell has happened? Yoel Romero has been released by the UFC. I mean, tell me, what's your thoughts?
I was shocked. Like, he had a couple of fights in his contract still, so it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense to me.
It must have been like a mutual thing. I mean, talk about someone that you know, Abe.
Yeah.
First round management Abe put a statement out there. No, it wasn't even Abe. It was Malky. Malky put it out there, saying that I want to thank the UFC, Dana White, Hunter Campbell, etc., for everything you've done for my client, blah, blah. So you think, why is there this amicable terms thing?
I think they've got big plans for Yoel Romero.
Yeah?
So you took him out of the UFC, not just to lie around. I think first round's got big plans for Yoel Romero.
Well, interestingly, Scott Coker has recently said that they won't be taking up on the opportunity to sign Yoel Romero. And I think that makes sense. Why would you leave the UFC to go to Bellator? Yes, he might get some belts there, but think about it as well. In Bellator, you've got Musasi leading the middleweight division. I don't Imagine really... That. It would be an amazing fight, but I don't think that fight sits too well for Yoel. I think Musasi's a very... I know, obviously, Yoel is an Olympic wrestler, but for me, Musasi might take that by decision. And I'm not sure that's what first-round management would want. But let me put this out there.
I know what you're going to say.
You know exactly what I'm going to say. Bare knuckle. Yeah. Right. I've got my theory. So, a few months, maybe even a few weeks ago, Bare Knuckle got their fastest ever knockout with Ulysses Diaz knocking out a guy in 3 seconds. So, in that video, you see him knock him out, run to the crowd, and then you see Yoel Romero in that crowd, and basically the camera focusing on him and him saying, oh, 3 seconds. He's just enjoying his time there. Now, shortly after, Ulysses Diaz signs with first round management. So for me, my theory is Ulysses Diaz is under the same brand as him now. Bare Knuckle can clearly offer some good money. I think Bare Knuckle, I've heard rumours where they've offered like $1 million for a night for a fight and that. I personally think Yoel Romero might have an interest in going to Bare Knuckle fighting. Now, final thing to secure that, Malky, someone replied to Malky about something about what's next, or they linked him to, I think it was PFL or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then Malky posted something like, how about in the boxing ring? I'm thinking, we're not. I don't think we're talking about normal boxing here. I think we're talking about something that's up and coming. And for me, Bare Knuckle, that's where Bare Knuckle fits. Bare Knuckle are also making some great signings at the moment. Ex-USU fighters, they've got some like, and there's a guy called Tornado Tyler.
Paige Van Zandt.
Paige Van Zandt. They are signing people around the world who are known in their respective places. So obviously Paige Van Zandt with MMA. I said Tornado Tyler was... Tyler Goodjohn is his name. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong if he's Gypsy, but he's one of them guys who's like, who was known in the UK as like one of the world's best bare knuckle boxers. He's signed with them now. So it's making me think that bare knuckle are starting to... Even they're getting coverage around the world.
There's two organisations, isn't it? I think there's a UK one and an American one, isn't that right? Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, it just makes me think that they are growing and in a scary fashion, really. And if they can sign someone like Romero, especially if they can offer, say, $1 million, I think he'll go. And I also think Romero kind of obviously...
He'd be scary, his style,
exactly. His style offers for them fights. He loves to hit hard, and that's exactly what they've got to do. There's no more wrestling. There's no more... It's literally knock each other out. And I think Romero can do that. And also, what we saw against Costa, Romero can take a bloody punch. It's scary how Romero can take a punch. I think that's going to be really interesting if he makes that move.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about another strange move as well. Anthony Rumble Johnson being released from his UFC contract and signing straight away with Bellator in their light heavyweight division. What do you think of this, mate?
See, I always loved Anthony Rumble Johnson when he was with Black Zillions, when we had that Ultimate Team, Ultimate Fighter season.
Yep.
Like, he's always been like a hard hitter.
Absolutely.
And if I think he's going to make a statement in Bellator.
So Johnson's a really strange one for me, because if you actually look at his record, he's kind of lost against good people, really. Mm-hmm. Lost against Gustafsson. Oh, no, I think he knocked Gustafsson out.
Uppercut, was it Uppercut?
Yeah.
Or was that Dickhead?
He did knock someone out in just, I can't remember who it was. But then obviously he lost to DC. Rumble Johnson has ended up losing quite a few fights by submission to people that he kind of really should beat. It's only against the guys like Jimmy Manoa, who are like known as the hard-hitting strikers, that Johnson's able to best. So, for me, I think he's one of them strange names that, in my opinion, if you put like John Jones up there, DC, Rumble Johnson, and Gustafsson, they are four light heavyweights who I think are possibly in the name for like the top five iconic light heavyweights of modern UFC era anyway. So you look at it and you think, but why? And it's just because Rumble Johnson is Rumble Johnson. He is just a fantastic name. And I think that he's moved to Bellator now. I think it's an awesome, awesome move. And I think he's going to spice up that light heavyweight division there.
Light heavyweight. I'm just thinking, Corey Anderson, what weight is he?
Exactly.
Oh, that's yes.
Already, yeah. So from what I know, Vadim Nemkov, the current protege of Fedor Emelianenko, the current champion, he will be facing Corey Anderson next. But I then think Johnson, I don't know if they'll give Johnson a opening fight in Bellator. I don't know if they'll give him straight to the title. And if I'm honest, I would just love to see it. I would love to see Johnson, say Johnson Anderson or even Johnson Nemkov. it would be a fantastic fight.
Yeah.
What I do hope they don't do with Johnson, there is a name in Bellator who he's actually my first ever interview, Julius Angliscus. He's 10-1 now, I think. It might be 9-1, but I think he's 10-1. He has beaten two guys in Bellator, where one of them was a guy, Jordan, I can't remember his name anymore, Jordan Young, I think it was, who was 11-0, and obviously they're handing Angliscus had only lost, I think, by submission, and it was a bit like, yeah, this is a bit weird that their up-and-coming prospect in Young is a submission artist. But Angliscus went in there and beat him over three rounds, because that's what Angliscus is good at, unanimous decisions, he's so good. And then that Alex Polizzi, the guy who... Alex Polizzi, I think he knocked someone out in... Rafael Cavallo, the ex-champion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He knocked him out, so they were thinking, like, oh, shit, this guy's 6-0. He's an upcoming talent. So, Julius Angliscus got him. And I thought, you're giving him the guys that you want to go on to be great. And fucking Angliscus beat him. And I was so happy watching it. I sent him a message up. I was like, mate, congratulations. He's such a nice guy. Mate, he is built like a brick shit house. He is so, so, so ripped. But he's one of the guys who I don't think people know a lot about yet. But in my opinion, he's going to be brilliant in the future. I really hope that Bellator don't try and offer him to like Johnson. Because yeah. I think Johnson will lose it. I honestly do. I think Johnson obviously has his KO power, which is scary. But I think that if someone like Angliscus can notice that Johnson's grappling game isn't as strong. Yes, he's powerful as fuck. But like... his actual submission game isn't great. I think we might see Johnson lose his debut because they're relying on a knockout.
But do you reckon he'll not make a name on Johnson either if he wins him?
What's that, sorry?
He'll not make a name. See, if he got offered.
Oh, exactly.
Fight, he'll not make a name.
Of course he would. And that's obviously what worked for Angliscus, but I just don't want to see Johnson go in there, be offered a guy that no one particularly knows, and then fucking get smashed. I do think that the biggest danger with Johnson against anyone who gets offered him is the KO power. It's just...
yeah.
It's like fighting Romero. It's like fighting Jimmy Manua. Yes, you could win the fight. But if you get clipped hard by them, not only is that your fight over, potentially even your career, they are that powerful that they could genuinely cause a lot of damage. For me, I just love the move to Bellator, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Right, let's move on to our fight announcement. We have just one this week. There's not many that we picked through and sift through that we didn't think was better than Romero or Rumble Johnson, but we do have one. Really interesting fight here. Dominic Cruz versus Casey Kenny, March the 6th, UFC 259. What do you think of this?
I think Dominic Cruz is coming off a title loss.
Mm.
But then, I reckon it's going to be a really good fight. I think it's going to be a stand and non-stop. But it's going to be a hard one. It's a hard one to pick.
For me, it's a really strange one. Although we won't break the full fight down now, we'll break it down when it comes to it. But I like the fight because I think Casey Kenny is on a good roll at the moment.
Yeah,
and he's good all around. His output's very good. But now he comes up against someone like Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz is now coming up against a guy who's not got the experience that most people need to face him. So it's gonna be interesting. Is it Kenny's time then to be pushed for a title shot? As in, I'm not saying he'll get immediately after Cruz, but he's at least in the top five, top four, top three picture. But if Cruz wins, I think then he chucks himself straight back into saying, yeah, I'm back. I've just beaten someone easily who you thought was going to be a rising prospect. Give me what I deserve.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting. But that is now what all we have time for. I don't even know if that sentence made sense. Let's try that one again. So for now, that is all we have time for. That is much better. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Make sure to like, share and subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on Saturday the 19th, where we have an absolutely brilliant card ahead. Chimaev versus Edwards was due to headline, but it is now Wonderboy versus Neil. But don't let Edwards versus Chimaev fool you. The rest of the card is just fantastic as well.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to break this down. We might even have to make it a longer episode because there is just too many fights there to miss. I've been your host, Jake Jones. And as always, I want to say a big thank you to my friend, Sean Gilley, for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.
You have been brilliant as always, mate. And I look forward to what the next few weeks hold. As I have said a few times, we're going to have a Christmas special coming soon. It will likely be the week after Christmas, but it may be just after the Edwards episode. Likely the week after Christmas, but keep an eye out for it because it's going to be good fun. I'm not even going to be, I'm not going to be hosting, mate. Me and you are going to be sat back chilling, and Liam, our producer, is going to take the reins for the show.
Yeah.
So all me and you have to do is sit back, relax, and have a beer. I'm looking forward to it, my friend. We'll catch you in a bit, and you have a good evening.
See you, man. Bye.